The Institute on Religious Life and the Daughters of St. Mary of Providence of Chicago bring you the next lecture in a series given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J. on the theme, The History of Religious Life. Father John Hardin is a professor of theology at St. John's University in New York. He is a well-known lecturer and consultant to various national, religious, and educational enterprises, and is renowned as a retreat master and spiritual director. Father Hardin is the author of many articles and books, including Holiness in the Church and the Catholic Catechism, which has been strongly endorsed by Holy Mother Church. In this following lecture, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, St. Elizabeth Seton and American Spirituality. Father Hardin.
What you have outlined at what may look like a crowded page is all drawn from the documents of the Holy See regarding Elizabeth Seton. Whatever is there somehow is found in some pontifical document. There are four principal documents that can be consulted. There is a whole volume of the so-called Acta of Beatification, hundreds of pages of the study of Elizabeth Seton's virtues. But in terms of documents, the first is the decree of her beatification and then canonization, the two decrees in which her life and virtues are synthesized. The second is the homily that Pope Paul VI gave on the day of her canonization. The third is the allocution that the same Pope gave to the American hierarchy. And the fourth is an Angelus message sometime later in which Pope Paul came back to Mother Seton. What's on this page is drawn from that pontifical teaching. You will notice this is the first and only time we will do what we are doing here. We will identify a saint and the founders of a religious institute with American spirituality. And that for the best of reasons. She is the first Native American to be canonized. At long last, we can say, we've got a chance too. First description of American spirituality. Evidently, in its substance or essentially, it cannot be different from other spiritualities. The following of Christ, the carrying of the cross, all the things that we associate with a spiritual life are inherent in American as in English, German, Italian, or any other. But, and Pope Paul couldn't have made more than he did in stressing that there is a qualifying aspect or form to the American way of life which then will necessarily characterize an American's approach to God. Nothing substantively different can't be, otherwise it wouldn't be the one holy Catholic Church. But qualifying necessarily. Now the qualification in the spirituality is determined by the features that are typical of American culture. The features there identified, and there are 10, as characteristic of American culture, which affect the spiritual life, are also drawn from pontifical teaching. The wording is my own. The ideas are those of the late Pope Paul VI. First, American culture is built on Protestant laws and institutions. Not to know that is to be living in a different than American society. Not everything about Protestantism is anti-Catholic. But a few features of Protestantism are, well, the characteristics of Catholicism. But Protestantism is not Catholicism. What are some of the features? And by now we've seen many aspects of this, just to pinpoint one or the other, especially as affecting Elizabeth Seton and what we can learn from her. Protestant laws from the beginning of our republic places stress on the individual, which grows out of the strong personalist approach to God in Protestantism that by now has affected every aspect of American society. The institutions, beginning with our country. Our founding fathers were all, that is, those who drafted the Constitution, those who gave us, you might call it the physiognomy of the United States, were either believing or formally professed Protestants. Whatever else our founding fathers wanted, because they were Protestants, was separation of church and state. Many reacting strongly against the establishment of church under the state in England. In the United States, it is in what we call the free church tradition, which believed that church and state should be completely separated. Again, by the time the American Republic was founded, the end of the 18th century, that's already, well, 200 years after the Reformation. Marriage had been completely taken over by the state. Marriage is a secular institution. Protestantism, having rejected the papacy, realized you must have some authority. So what did Protestantism do? It transferred the authority that had been in the hands of the church to the state. Until now we have in the United States, and already had in Elizabeth's day, the state setting the moral standards of the country. I think for millions of Americans, even abortion is not wrong. Why not? Because it's legalized. At any rate, that's the first feature of American culture. Second, English language and influence. Notice I say English language and influence. By now, we in the United States have become so used to speaking of English without a second thought Do you realize what we're saying when we say English? There was a country by that name. What is its name? England. The great German Chancellor Bismarck, on one occasion, was asked, what did he consider the most important single fact, not event, the most important single fact of modern history? Without hesitation, the most important single fact of modern history is that England and the United States speak the same language. Which means that so much of English thought, English sentiment, has been transferred, has become part of our American culture. How many of us studied any, say, of the great Spanish or French novelists or dramatists in literature? Cervantes, for example, among the Spaniards. Or Pascal among the French. Yet we all know Shakespeare, and having been on the stages, I think I told you on one occasion before I became a Jesuit, the peak of my theatrical career is being Henry the Fourth once. So that American culture has absorbed deeply of English thought, sentiment, ideas. And this, in turn, has deeply affected American thinking. Third, the primacy of individual liberty. Whatever else our founding fathers wanted, it was a nation of individuals who would be beholden to no one under God. The phrase of John Calvin that synthesizes Protestantism could be written at the masthead of American culture. Soli Deo Gloria, to God alone be the glory, no one else. Well, that's a pious phrase, and as such it's correct. But spoken with Protestant lips, against the backdrop of now 2 centuries of American history, it means that we are responsible to no one. And that's where we got our Supreme Court canonizing individual liberty to the point of, as we know, not merely permitting or tolerating, but legislating crime in the name of freedom. Fourth, the implicit subordination of church to state. In American society, we may say we began with separation of church and state, but by now we've reached a point where there's no doubt it is subordination of church to the state. You name the enterprise in which the church is engaged. What can we operate as Catholics without a license from the state? Name one thing. Nothing. From the marriage license, which either you have or your marriage as a Catholic priest that you witness is not valid. My Jesuit confrere, Father Lawrence Flynn, on one occasion in Kentucky, to assist at the wedding of his niece, while he was waiting for the bridal party to come in. They're always late for weddings, by the way. As he was waiting for the bridal party, the pastor stepped in, by the way, he says, "Did you get your license?" License. Faculties to assist at the wedding. No, I mean from City Hall, did you get a license? This was Saturday. No. No, sorry. You cannot witness the wedding. the marriage would be invalid, the children would be illegitimate. From that to all the details that each of you knows in whatever apostolic work you're engaged in, to put up these buildings, you had to get a building permit and it had to meet specifications, and you better believe it. And as by now I've heard enough about the daughters of St. Mary of Providence in dealing with your girls here, report on everything. Am I correct? You give the girl one pill, that makes one notation. Two pills, two notations. You put on one bandage, one record. Two bandages, two records. I've been told by people that except for religious communities, we would long ago have closed our welfare institutions. We are being persecuted by the state that so far from assisting is making it almost impossible to continue conducting our institutions, hospitals, schools, welfare homes for the aged and retarded, and so on. And there is nothing more pathetic than a small mind that has power. And they've got power. Subordination of church to state. And we better know this. Authority through representation. This is so typically Protestant and so characteristically American. No wonder there was so much democratization in the Catholic Church. To know they're voting on everything. By one vote, once strong religious communities have secularized. Say, 21 chapter delegates, the vote, 11 to 10, they're told to remove their habits, drop their superiors, go into apartments, and go on an open placement. That's authority through representation. Stress on temporal well-being, not surprising, because there's so much of this world's good that America has access to. In case you haven't been told, we are the wealthiest nation in human history by every standard. We have the longest lifespan. We consume the most food. We have the least working hours. We have the highest wage scale. We have the most telephones, television sets, automobiles, anything that in any way symbolizes, may the Lord forgive us. A developed society, we've got it. And we have the gall to call other people undeveloped. At any rate, stress on temporal well-being. Don't tell me you can live the spiritual life easily in the midst of this affluence. Education for Democracy. Elizabeth Seton built on this premise of American society. Where we as Catholics, if we are really familiar with our faith, would say education for salvation. But by American standards, if you're going to have a representative government, you need to have an enlightened citizenry. Now, we know, how well we know, that not everybody who votes, votes intelligently. Is that a safe statement? But at least a country has a better chance, other things being equal, if its citizens who vote in a republic have some education. In other words, a democracy is only as viable as its citizens are educated. Tolerance as a way of life. This was inevitable. The number of Protestant denominations in the United States today, I'm not sure, I'm currently revising my volume on the Protestant Churches of America. I may have told you, there are 30 in the last 10 years since the last revision, 30 Protestant denominations have gone out of existence. 40 new ones, brand new ones, came into existence. I don't know the latest figure, but the last that I'm familiar with was 265. Given all these cults, sects, religions, given all the variety of societies, movements, Kalamazoo, Michigan. Did I tell you this? You all heard about Kalamazoo, haven't you? Oh, it's a diocese now, if you please. It's in the state of Michigan. I taught there for 5 years. It is spelled like zoo. The last syllable is Z-double-O. Kalamazoo is not a big metropolis. Give or take 80,000 people. To be able to quote the figure, there are over 2,000 organizations in that one city. In the United States, we tolerate everything. You name it, and America has it. And we call it the American way of life. And this, of course, places a heavy responsibility on those who wish to serve God in the following of Christ. On the one hand, we have freedom. On the other hand, we have problems. And finally, practicality and organization. The United States has more gadgets, more gimmicks, more instruments, more pieces of machinery than I dare say any other civilized nation in history. We try to reduce everything to practice. Only the United States could have produced a William James. American practicality. William James was a believer of a sort. But he said, speaking of God, there are certain divine attributes that I don't think are important. Why not? Because you can't do anything with them. In other words, pragmatism would even reduce God to what can you use him for. God, then, don't you think this is sadly true? God is only as important for many Americans as he serves a function. An organization, we've got it. Whenever two Americans meet, they form an organization. And where there are three, they start two organizations. So much for the characteristics. There was a deep appreciation in Elizabeth Seton of the presence of God's grace in those who are Christians indeed, but not Catholic. Never in papal history, there was never an occasion to do this. Did the Pope, in declaring a saint, say that she began her ladder to sanctity as a Protestant? In other words, Protestants can be good people. Do you believe that? I mean, just so that you've heard it once. God's grace is both given to those who are Christians but not Catholics, and many cooperate with that grace. I just wish that all Catholics were as responsive to God's grace as some Protestants I know. Do you agree? And consequently, in dealing with Protestants, which has been almost my middle name, I found it simply natural to know as much as I can about them that is good and build on that. It invites respect from them, keeps them from becoming defensive, and opens them for further grace, which I, as a Catholic, am confident I can share with them. Second, the necessity of Catholic schools. Notice, this is not merely the necessity of Catholic education, but of Catholic schools. Catholic schools in many quarters, including Catholic ones, are on trial now. And I'm speaking of the right, or from another viewpoint, wrong city. In 1 year, Chicago Archdiocese closed 26 of its Catholic schools and sold the buildings to the public school system. And you know why? Because the sisters who had been teaching in them had lost their commitment to Catholic schools. Undoubtedly, one reason why the Church canonized Elizabeth Seton in this convulsive age of the Church's history. The Pope couldn't be clearer. One reason, he said, she's being raised to the honors of the altar is to remind Catholics that what she started in her day is more than ever needed in our day. We need Catholic schools, and conducted by religious.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.